Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? Podcast like it's 1999.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it?
1999.
Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I am your host, Phil Liskov, and with us today is Katie Donahue, feature executive and friend to all, and maybe most importantly, the biggest SVU fan I know. So she's here to talk to us about an enormous television show that, quite frankly, I don't know a ton about. So I'm thrilled to have somebody on here to talk with me about it. We're going to talk today about Law & Order Special Victims Unit. This was a show that it premiered in 1999. It was a big deal in 99. Did you watch it in 99, Katie? Or was this a show that you came to a little later?
I was 7. So no, listen, I didn't watch it.
I don't know what you were up to when you were 7.
My older brother, I do have a very specific memory of my brother watching it. And I don't know what episode it was, but someone opened a barn and there was a body. And I was like 8. And I was just like, very calmly, like, this is not appropriate. And I didn't watch it for a very long time. And then in high school, I started watching again. And then during the pandemic, I've seen every episode of Law & Order Special Victims Unit.
So all 481 episodes.
Oh my God. That's so sad. They're all 40 minutes long.
Think about how much of your life you've spent with
so
Olivia
much.
Benson.
Like a lot. I mean, what a privilege. But yeah, the show is really about the arc. I mean, yes, the arc of Olivia Benson, but it's really about the arc of Finn Tutuola, who is played by Ice-T. He wasn't in the episode I had you watch. He doesn't join till 2000. But let me tell you, that kid goes on quite the journey in the department.
Well, I want to hear all about that journey.
Okay.
But I want to sort of ask a question. I'm not really sure to ask this, so forgive me if this seems, I don't know, somewhat indelicate. But I feel like this show, women love this show. Like of my female friends, it feels like a show that gravitates more, that women gravitate maybe possibly more to than men do. Mm. And I think part of that has to do with Olivia's character, and mm-hmm. we'll talk obviously about her character and her arc and the empowerment of her character. She felt like she kind of broke the mold of like a female cop on television. Again, I'm saying this all kind of out of my ass because I don't know the show as well as you do, but I'm speaking really just from, I guess the best way to come at this ultimately is So Law & Order, the original show, is on for many years, over
and
a decade.
I've never seen it. I do. Right. I don't watch that.
Perfect. But that show's on for many, many years. I want to say about a decade or so before SVU happens.
Yeah.
And it's a show that was sort of, you know, had a revolving door of cast. You had people that were leaving all the time. It was a show that was sort of bifurcated, which was half of the show was Law, half of the show was Order. First half of the show follows the cops, and then whatever the crime is follows it into the you know, justice system, which is
I didn't even know that. That's really nice. That sounds like a...
That is amazing. This is going to be a learning experience for both of us, Katie.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, it was I still think it's the watermark for procedural television, right? You're not going to get anything cleaner than the idea of 44 minutes split down the middle, 22-22 of cops and lawyers. Like, it's really, really brilliant in that way. I guess what happens, just for our audiences to have a little bit of context, the idea for Special Victims Unit originates in 86 with a quote-unquote preppy murder case of Robert Chambers, who strangled Jennifer Levin, a woman he dated, whom he later killed during what he claimed was a consensual rough sex in Central Park.
Twas not.
This crime inspired Dick Wolf to write the story for the season one episode of Law & Order titled Kiss the Girls and Make Them Die. Oof. Not a great title.
I mean, there's a real ebb and flow in terms of title quality throughout the series.
Even after reading the episode, however, the case continued to haunt Wolf, who wanted to go deeper into the psychology of crimes to examine the role of human sexuality. The original title of this show was Sex Crimes.
Mm-hmm. Can I make a note? Later on, when they are on their softball league and everyone has their matching t-shirts, their team is just Sex Crimes. Like, it's just t-shirts that say Sex Crimes.
By the way, can you imagine if you could get one of those shirts with that?
I looked into it, obviously.
Oh God, that's incredible. So they wanted to name the show Sex Crimes, which reflected the sexual nature of the crimes depicted on the show. Long story short, NBC was like, we don't really want to name a show Sex Crimes. they also were concerned about calling it Law & Order : Sex Crimes, that it could hurt the original show.
Right.
So they were just like, can we not do that? So they named it Special Victims Unit, which is the actual name of the unit. So yeah, that happens. They were casting this show. Uh-huh. Three people were up for the role of Olivia Benson: Samantha Mathis, Reiko Aylesworth, and Mariska Hegarty. For Stabler, it was Tim Matheson, John Slattery, and Christopher Maloney. Can you imagine John Slattery? Can you imagine that?
I would have had the thoughts for him like in the late 90s instead of waiting until Mad Men.
By the way, he probably looked the same in the 90s as he did on Mad Men.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah. He is married to George Clooney's first wife.
Who's that?
Which I think says every... I don't know, but someone hot enough to marry George Clooney. And now she's married to John Slattery. I think that says everything you need to know about him. I mean,
Chris Maloney's great on this show. And obviously this was an iconic performance from him. And he's fantastic. And he's returning to the role later this year, next year.
Yeah.
John Slattery would have been an interesting call. He would have been an interesting Stabler.
They would have gotten six seasons out of him, max. He would have been like, I'm actually a very talented actor and I have to go.
And I cannot do 25 of these every year. Like, this is just not, so obviously they cast Mariska and Chris Maloney. Yeah, so that's kind of a little bit of context for the show. But I think that what's interesting about this is I remember when this show premiered, I remember that it was a big deal. I remember that it was the first spinoff of Law & Order. There would be many more, and there will be many more, I assume. But at the time, it felt like sort of this scandalous show. Like, it scandalous in the sense that it was about sex crimes. Like, it was about, and which for NBC. In 99, like, that's a pretty fucking bold thing to do. And I guess my question, this is a long way of saying this, but my question is sort of, what drew you to the show? And certainly, what kept you with the show for 481 episodes?
What drew me to the show? I mean, I guess my brother watched it and that made it interesting, but it's also, especially now when I watch it, because I've grown to have a bigger appreciation for it. I'm like being very serious. I care.
You should be. You should be. People love the show. You mean, you love it.
I mean, yeah, I do. I think, I mean, in 99, and you can even tell in, like, you know, the early episodes of, they're kind of explaining constantly, like, this is a sexually based crime. Like, marital rape is still rape. Like, you know, they were really kind of fighting against these cultural stereotypes of what, sex-based crimes, particularly crimes against women, look like, long before we were talking about Me Too. And I think, like, that it was 1999, it's like, okay, so this was like 6 months after Clinton was impeached. You know, there, it's like kind of people were thinking about sex in different ways. And so it's kind of, I'm always kind of like, wow, it's pretty radical that NBC was like, sure, let's like do a sex crimes thing. And, you know, they get a little, some of the episodes are a little movie of the week, you know, they take on real life, whatever, but some of them are, I don't know, even though they do it in the most on the nose way, there's something about, I don't know. There's something about like Chris Maloney really fucking caring.
No, for sure. Like, yeah. For sure. I think there's also, you know, it's funny that you say that. I don't know that this show gets made if it's not under the banner of Law and Order. I mean, I don't know that you know, Law and Order at this point is this, you know, a staple of television that's won numerous Emmys. And, you know, Dick Wolf wants to sort of take a swing and see if there's a way to kind of under the steam and the kind of headwinds or tailwinds of Law and Order to be able to do this. And mm-hmm. I guess I respect the intentions of the show. Like, I think that it is attempting to sort of explain and expose to people crimes of this nature, which are very specific and brutal and terrible. So I respect all of that. That being said, I also think that the show can be quite clunky. And is not necessarily very subtle in terms of its execution of things. Now, admittedly, I only watched the first two episodes of season one for this episode, for this particular episode of the podcast. I have seen other episodes of the show over the years. I'd say maximum 10. Max. Okay.
That's not even a full season. That's not even half
a season. No, it's not. But here's sort of my bigger question to you. And I think it's interesting that you haven't watched any other iteration of Law and Order, just this one. which would lead me to believe that Olivia Benson is what's keeping you around.
Probably. I have a real thing for Mariska, for sure. Also, the other ones are not free on Hulu.
Okay. Well, I mean, at least we have our priority straight. No, I mean, I think that, so Mariska is an interesting actress. I think she's tremendous in this show. Taylor Swift would obviously agree, since she named her first cat Olivia Benson. So, I mean, it's,
all right.
It's wow.
No, I mean, we love
Taylor Swift. That was amazing.
She's not the parameters of my feminism. Olivia Benson is an incredible character, and she's also Jane Mansfield's daughter, which is so cool.
Yeah, that's super cool. I wasn't suggesting, by the way, that Taylor Swift was the watermark for feminism. I was just suggesting that I think it's kind of funny that she named her cat Olivia Benson.
Oh, okay. That
was really all I was
thinking. This is Dana Schwartz, our mutual friend. This is like our biggest grievance, is I'm always picking Taylor Swift's feminism apart.
Well, I mean, I imagine that's relatively easy to do. This is all great. This is gold. We're going to double it. So Mariska came to my attention in one of my favorite shows, which was ER. She had an arc. I think she was a pretty long arc. I think it was like maybe 10 or 12 episodes or something like that. Maybe more.
On what show? Sorry.
ER. She was in season four of ER. She had a love story with Anthony Edwards' character. Anyway, she was great on that show. And I remember thinking like, oh, she's great. And then she kind of disappeared. And then she obviously reappeared on this show. And you know, etched herself in television history by being one of the longest running characters in the history of the medium.
We're always talking about Ellen Pompeo and like, no.
But the irony is that's the name of Taylor Swift's other cat.
That's funny.
So I think that, I guess I want to sort of, so her character, Olivia's character, was the result of a rape, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
I mean, spoiler alert, but that's a huge part of her character. Yeah,
spoiler, yes. Spoiler to the people that, I don't know, are not going to watch the 481 episodes of this show.
That's like a major thing about her, is that, like, right, you know, she has a lot of self-demons because of...
But that is sort of tipped in the pilot.
Is it? Because I didn't rewatch the pilot.
In the pilot, she has dinner with her mom at the end of the pilot.
Right.
And her mom says something along there's something along the lines of, you know, if it hadn't happened, I wouldn't have had you, or something like that.
Right,
like,
right.
They're sort of alluding to, we apparently,
in her original character document, they just
100%,
right,
100%. Probably maybe the only thing that was in
like her only bullet point. And Stabler like has four kids and a complicated
Stabler's
marriage.
Got a whole complicated marriage and he's got stuff going on. So it is sort of, the mom is never seen again on the show, by the way. It's only seen in the
pilot. We talk about her, again, inner demons, you know. Her mom was an alcoholic, and she deals with, it's how she kind of connects with a lot of different victims and survivors, is from her own personal story.
which, if we're being honest, you kind of feel from the jump, right? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Olivia has demons. And that it is motivating her through her occupation.
She's a single woman who's thrown everything she has into her profession. And like, is she ever going to find love and companionship and feel safe in the world? That it's funny to me how hard that question is driven home just throughout the series. Like,
do they ever answer it? Years.
I mean, yeah, later on she adopts a son. She has a series of significant relationships, but I think it's important that she's on her own. I mean, she's enough. So,
well, I think this also speaks to something that really hit me watching these two episodes. Yeah. And I know that they, in season two, they bring in a lawyer character. Right?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. We go through a couple ADAs. They're right. Cabot, Alex is the best by far.
March.
I only know that. If I ever meet any of these people in real life,
it's going to be fantastic.
I know. Honestly, even Ice-T, I would just be like, Finn, you character, you're here. Like, if I saw Munch just walking down the street, I'd lose my mind. I have no idea what that.
I just want it to be said that I am doing what I can through whatever channels I have to try to get some cast members, and you're coming back to interview those cast members with me if I'm able to make that happen.
That would be huge, because
I won't be able to know shit. I'll just be like,
you can get minor. There are a few actors who have just played different victims in unrelated. You can get those.
I would like to get regular cast members that actually, but we'll see. Okay. Long story short, I hope that someday you get to meet Olivia and just call her Olivia. Like, you get to meet Friska and just call her Olivia. It'll be great.
Oh my God, I would never. Ms. Hargitay. Ms.
So what I was getting at ultimately a little bit was this idea that the first two seasons of the show, or it seems like a season or so, there is no legal component to this show. It is straight up the cops. And because of that, you go home with them, which is something you do not do on the original Law and Order. You don't really learn about these people's lives. I think ultimately that is to this show's advantage, because it allows you to care more about their stories, obviously, and be more invested in them. But I guess my question to you is, do you feel like they weaponize that well? Do you feel like when you go home with Stabler, or when you go home with Benson, you know, they really give you stuff that helps the characters, that feeds the characters?
It's in later seasons. The early seasons, they really try to tell you about Stabler's life, and he and his wife like separate at some point. They have a surprise baby. That episode is beyond drama. But after a while, I think they, like, I don't care about Stabler's life. I'm interested in Olivia's life. Stabler's life just feels like, oh, it's like the late 90s and we have a male lead. And so this is like, you have to know about his family life too. That's how it feels like to me, because they really don't talk that much about Olivia's life other than like, who will ever be there for her? She is alone, which is great. The one thing I really love, and it speaks to so many episodes, but in the episode we watched, the second episode, so it's like this single woman dies and the whole thing is shrouded in like, it could have been you, Olivia. And it's the weirdest thing.
I mean, it literally opens with a man at a convenience store trying to get her to buy more fruit. She's like, yeah, no, she goes, just I need one.
Which is also crazy. Don't buy one. Like, you are still alive tomorrow. They really drive that home. So they kind of back off Stabler's home life. As they allow more time for like the courtroom stuff and they get into like victim stuff, I think they start to ease off. Like, you have the like emotional background of knowing what the deal is. Like, you know, when Stabler's like bitching about Kathy, that something's like going on at home, but you don't go home as much.
Well, okay, did I answer your question? Absolutely.
I guess, you totally did.
To
the benefit that there's like an outside of work life, but it's also like I'm bored by Stabler's whole situation.
Well, this is the thing that the show kind of tries to grapple with, and I respect that they try to do it. It's a tough nut to crack sometimes, in the sense of being able to kind of. Like, going home with Stabler because his garbage disposal is broken.
And he murders a turtle.
Is like, okay, like, cool. But what am I getting from this? Like, what are you really bringing to the table? With a show like this, it's a little tricky to do that. Mm-hmm. Here's a question.
Okay.
Do Olivia and Elliot ever hook up?
No. They are partners.
I honestly, you guys could see how emphatic Katie is about this.
No, I mean, there are a lot. There are definitely a few episodes where the writers were like, let's leave this door open, you know? Right. But they never hook up.
Okay.
Kathy, for the most part, really gets their relationship. That's Elliot's wife. I think that Olivia and... Don't laugh at me.
I love that you're this invested. That's
cool. I think Olivia and Stabler are ultimately excellent partners in life, okay. You know? Okay. And way later, after Stabler leaves, there's an episode, I believe it's when she, at her son's baptism, Olivia's son's baptism. So this is like 16 years after the episode that you watched.
That's incredible, by the way, that you can say that 16 years later.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. It's this woman's whole life is what this show is. But she says something to her current partner along the lines of like, I loved my old partner so much, but there was no room for me to have like a life. Yeah. Which I thought was really interesting. I was really surprised she said it. Anyway, so they have like an extreme partnership, but they no smooches, nothing like that. Olivia loves Kathy, cares for their kids. You know, his daughters go through some, you know, tricky times, particularly Kathleen, little troublemaker, and Olivia is like right there for her. So, you know, no, to answer your question.
The reason I asked the question, and I had a feeling that was the answer, is also kind of a bold thing. I mean, I think that a lot of other shows would have probably gone there. I guess it's sort of kind of Mulder and Scully a little bit, although eventually they sort of do hook up, I guess, kind of. I mean, they have a kid, but through weird circumstances, so I don't know that that's really, really
it's counts. Not a good comp.
Well, and there's aliens and shit in their show, so like it's not the best comp. But I just think it's interesting that people must have been longing for it. I am sure that there's fanfic written about the two of them. There's no question that there are people that have written stories and concocted things in their heads. And I just like that the show respected that and that they didn't do anything with it. It's kind of great.
I'm curious. I would like to research the kind of behind the scenes of that, of like, did suck because it seems like they would have, like, conventional television, they would have gotten together. I wonder if there was ever, like, you know, Mariska was like, no, they can't get together. Like, I kind of wonder.
Well, that's a good, I mean, it's very possible that maybe it was put on the table and the actors were like, that's, I don't see the characters doing that. It's possible that, I mean, but I would also say too, like, despite the fact that this show can be very soapy in its victim stories, mm-hmm. it doesn't really go there with its main cast.
No.
But then if you look at like the Chicago series, Chicago Fire, Med, and PD, I think. Anyway.
Trash. But okay.
That series is also like that's right. that so
this gets later on again, like 15 years on from where you are in the series.
Yes. Olivia, and where I'll remain, by the way.
Olivia gets kidnapped. Oh shoot, who's the actor? A really fantastic actor. Is it Pablo? Who's Liev Schreiber's brother?
I think it's Pablo.
Okay, yeah. So he is her kidnapper, and there is a series, and that is like emotionally really about.
Olivia gets kidnapped?
Yeah, I mean.
Hold on.
Later on. Oh, you not just now.
No, I can't. I just. You threw that away like it was no big deal. Is it like, how long is she kidnapped for?
She's kidnapped twice. By the same guy.
At different times?
Yeah, it's like about a year apart. He's got some like legal loopholes that he's taking advantage of to get out of prison. It's extremely stressful. They are really.
I just think it's amazing that a police officer is kidnapped not just once, but twice by the same fucking person.
I know. And that really messes with her like confidence as an officer. But you know what? The unit gets her out. They are bigger than just one piece of the chain.
You know, I might have to watch all the episodes now. This is the problem, is that you're going to get me to like watch 481 episodes of Law and Order SVU.
They go through waves of kind of what they are, you know, but all the waves are enjoyable if you just like hang out. If you just ride them. It's fun. Some of them are like genuinely interesting episodes of like procedural television.
Agree that perhaps season one of Law and Order SVU is not its strongest season.
No, because in season one they're still going around like, yeah, rape is a crime. Like they're still telling everyone like, don't, like it's actually illegal. You know, like they're still explaining what they are. And there's a moment in this episode actually when Stabler he says one of the cops calls him like the political correctness unit, and he's like,
yes.
Yeah, and he was like, this is a crime with obvious sexual overtones. And it's just like, you don't get that as the series progresses, because they're just like, yeah, a naked woman was found, like we should investigate that with a certain like sensitivity.
I definitely sense that in the first two episodes that this is one of those things where, because this show had to do something that most shows don't have to do, right? And I mean, you've watched many television shows, obviously, like, you know, your first two episodes are your pilot, where you're setting everything up. And then your second episode basically has to repilot everything all over again and be like, this is what the show is. And this show has to do that, not on the sort of the nuts and bolts of cops. It has to do it in terms of the specificity of the crimes that they're going to be solving. So there is a lot of clunky, like, she clearly was raped, and this guy being like, well, it wasn't like she was, did you see what she was wearing? Like shit like that, where you're just like, what are we doing?
No.
But it's necessary up top. Do you feel like you have a favorite episode or a favorite season or a favorite arc?
Season-wise, like seasons 4 through 6 are really tight. Because that's when it's a mix. The crimes, because it's like, okay, also what's interesting is that there's only one Manhattan SVU. There's one. Okay. They have no open cases. That's part of their thing. Even Corgan mentions it, of like, we don't have a backlog. And it's like, well, that's crazy. You're handling every rape in this borough. Yeah. That's insane. So they're very hard workers. And you get to see that. But you see, I mean, some of the crimes are really dark. And then that's also when they start getting into reimagining real life crimes that have happened. Okay. And that can be very fun because they start off so on the nose of what the real crime was. And then they go off into just like, wow, I did not see that coming. And in I'll give you an example. And this is not in season six. This is later. In their Casey Anthony episode, they're not Casey Anthony episode. As Casey Anthony is played by Hilary Duff, which is incredible. And it starts off very similar to the Casey Anthony case. And then it goes off and it turns into about anti-vaxxers. So they got two kind of hard hitters in the same episode. So there are things like that where it's just like, that's insane. Like, who writes an episode that goes that far off the rails? And it's fascinating to watch because there's just no way you could have figured that crime out. Like, oh, she has measles. Like, what? I don't know. I find it very interesting.
I think what you're saying is incredibly interesting in terms of how it is, what it must be like to write episodes of this show. Like, I'm watching these episodes and thinking to myself, you know, procedural television, for all intents and purposes, is, I don't want to say easier to write, but intrinsically there is something, you're working from a procedure, you're working from a structure, right? So you're working from something, which in and of itself is already a gift. But what this show has to do is have so many kind of twists and turns, unlike Law and Order, the original show, where you really, your case essentially really only had to have only a certain amount of twists within the first half and a certain amount in the second half. This has to have twists throughout the entire thing. And sometimes it can work to your benefit, to your point, which is you can go down blind alleys, you can do all kinds of twists and turns, and that's the fun of this show.
Right.
I don't necessarily think that the episode that we specifically watched had the best twists and turns.
No, it didn't.
But I'm going to give a synopsis very quickly of this episode for our listeners.
Solid episode pretty subversive for 99.
Yes. Yeah. 100%, for sure. We'll talk about the pros and cons of this episode in a second, but the synopsis, when the body of Gretchen Quinn is found wearing only a red slip after having been thrown at a window, Benson and Stabler soon find out that quote-unquote Gretchen Quinn was just an alias. While trying to piece together her life, the detectives are led to the victim's psychiatrist and a well-known television newscaster, both of whom were sleeping with her. It soon comes to light that she was a young woman who changed her name and identity after graduating high school to get away from her sexually abusive father. Mm-hmm. This episode also has a special appearance by Angie Harmon playing ADA Abby Carmichael from the original Law and Order show. This episode is titled A Single Life. It aired on September 27th, 1999. It was written by Miriam Kasdan and directed by Leslie Linkett Glatter. The show premiered on September 20th, 1999 as the second series in Wolf's successful Law and Order franchise. After the premiere of its 21st season in September 2019, the series became the longest running primetime U.S. live action series in the history of television. As of December 3rd, 2020, Law & Order Special Victims Unit has aired 481 original episodes, surpassing the episode count of the original Law & Order series. In terms of all-time episode count for a primetime scripted series, SVU now ranks fourth behind The Simpsons, Gunsmoke, and Lassie.
Wow.
Yeah. On February 2020, the series was renewed for its 22nd, 23rd, and 24th seasons.
Yeah.
The series has received 91 award nominations, winning 33 awards.
Which ones?
I mean, I don't know. Mariska Hargitay was the first regular cast member of any Law & Order series to win an Emmy Award. She won the Primetime Emmy Award for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series in 2006.
Yep.
It's quite the legacy.
That falls into my favorite seasons category.
It does. Falls right in that bracket.
She was doing that was fantastic work. That's where I'm sending you.
Send me. I'm being completely honest. I want you to send me to a season of this show that's at its peak because I do want to sort of. I mean, obviously, for this podcast, we needed to focus on 99, and I understand why we did, and I see the pros and the cons of that, and we'll talk about that, but. I would love to see this show at the peak of its powers. Like when this show is just like fully clicking and everybody's doing their best work.
Yeah.
You're going to point me in that direction.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this episode of Single Life. Woman's been raped. She's been thrown or jumped out a window.
Right. Can I say why I chose this episode?
Please, please, yes.
So 1999 was the first half of the first season. I didn't want to choose the pilot because that's too easy. It's not representative of what the show becomes. I ultimately chose this because of all the different like lanes. Like you think it's this TV anchor, you think it's maybe the therapist, and then it turns out to be the dad, which typically over the series, TV anchors, therapists, and fathers are like, do not trust those fuckers when they show up on Law & Order SVU. One of them did it.
So let me get this straight. The media, psychiatry, and fathers,
yeah,
this show has trust issues with.
Yeah, it's actually, I didn't realize it until last night when I was thinking about, like, they were really pointing the finger hard at this therapist, when I realized, like, they always point the finger super hard at the therapist. And it's like, the therapist just know, I mean, not in this case, he was a really bad guy in this episode, but yeah, typically the therapist just, like, knows what they know because they're their therapist and they're, like, yeah, trying to legally say what they can. And it's just, they're so rude to them of, like, we know you have your ethics or whatever.
Yeah, it does make you wonder if like cops and therapists really hate each other as much as they seem to on this show.
I know. It's really, I mean, if that doesn't, we can really dive into kind of that dynamic and what that speaks to in our criminal justice system.
And also just like the power dynamics that exist within both of those occupations are not great for all sorts of people, mostly people that are diverse or women, yeah, don't seem to do so well when it comes to the police. And the, but anyway.
Yeah. That's why I chose it. Cause it was like, oh, you're going to get like the just trifecta of suspects. And it's also like sexy. Like you got this TV anchor, then you got this New York therapist and then like her dad, you got to get some incest if you're going to just be watching one episode.
Yeah, that I'll say that the nadir of this episode is definitely the interrogation room scene between the father and the daughter.
Yeah.
Or the sister, I guess, is maybe the and this brings me to sort of I want a sort of a broader question to you as a Law & Order SVU fan. Law & Order is known for being a show that if you're an actor who lives in New York, you've probably done a stint on,
yeah,
a Law & Order.
My college dorm, it instead of saying like Barnard out in front, it just had a sign that said college residence. And so SVU shot in front of my building all the time because it just said like generic college residence.
Perfect.
And I was like, great, I'm glad we're finding bodies like all over my street.
It feels like the people that have like one or two scenes in an episode of Law & Order, it's like they know this is going on. They're real.
Yeah. I love it. Like the waiter, the gay waiter in this episode, yeah, is just like, chill.
It's like, it doesn't need to be at 11. You really could be at a 7.
But that's it's also crazy. What's great about these people that are only on. One of my favorite things about Law & Order, and I think it goes across the franchise, is universally, when people are being interviewed by the cops, they like go about their business. They're annoyed that the cops are talking, yeah, to them. And it's just like, if someone came to my place of work and was asking me about a murder, I would like not keep arranging flowers or like carrying boxes from the truck. Like I would stop, yeah, for 2 seconds. You can't act without a prop.
Well, there's also, I mean, as someone who you know, obviously works in television, if I tell you, busy work, you gotta,
I know, you gotta keep,
you gotta be doing something. It sucks, but it's like, it's so annoying.
Bizarre. Like, why are you irritated that these officers have come here?
I know.
All this brutal crime.
Or, like, why are you this excited?
Right. Like the waiter who was so jazzed.
So yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, it's kind of amazing. And it feels like there are kind of like there are levels of Law & Order actor, and by that I mean like you'll have a person like if you're a suspect, you're probably, right, of a higher quote unquote higher tier of actor than
and
if
it's
you're
a bummer, 'cause later in later seasons when you see a famous person appear on screen, you're like, well, you did it.
You
need to have your monologue at the end.
There was a time, I don't know when it was, because time is all relative right now, but I remember that my roommate and I watched like a batch of Law and Orders. It was just like a fun thing to do. And it was, you know, they're always on. And Amanda Peet showed up in one, and I was like, well, she did it, obviously. Right. It's like it's Amanda Peet, and obviously, and she was.
And it was Amanda Peet. I know. Sometimes they slip it right out from under you at the very end, and it like wasn't them somehow.
Yeah, you're like, interesting.
Yeah, but that's like the only twist. It like either was them or it almost was.
Can I also say, what do you think this episode is saying? So our victim, or the victim of this episode, was like a magazine writer, sort of like a pseudo kind of almost columnist.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like she was like, she'd be writing for Vulture now, I guess, is sort of the impression that I get.
Yeah.
They don't, but like they're kind of looking down their nose at it a 100%. Little bit.
Because I think they think that like, they're a little sexist themselves at times of like, oh, this sexy lady is a writer. Okay. They really have a hard time when it turns out she really was just a writer and they wasted all this time being like, no, she's a whore.
There's also, I mean, I have logistical questions about, so broad strokes, essentially what happens is she kills herself to essentially
at the men in her life.
Right. So she sacrificed
that an investigation would take police to these men.
Right. But like she throws herself out her own window.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, after 21 seasons, I can tell you, people throw themselves out of windows sometimes. It's a major bummer. What I find interesting is that whenever it's a pretty woman who has thrown herself out of a window, the cops feel no need to cover her body. They're like, she's good. Like, let's just leave her on top of the car, totally exposed. Which also happened in this episode, actually.
It did.
It's like just a rule. If it is a man who has jumped out of a window, they cover the body and it's like really sacrosanct. If it's a woman, it's like, come on over, guys. Yeah.
Check this out. Can I just say that I think that the reason why in 20 some odd seasons of this show people throw themselves out windows, it's red herring, so that you think that someone threw them out of a window rather than doing it themselves, because I don't think people would do it themselves.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's my point.
You kind of step out of a window.
You go out to the patio, you take a second.
Throw yourself. That is a very fair point that I... Me
and also like
did not pick up on.
Not to get into logistics here, but the run she would have to take to get through the window over the balcony. I mean,
but she was trying to set these guys up. She knew what she was doing. She left the wine glasses. She, you know,
the condom,
and the actual suicide note, which right at the last minute. So the sister in this interrogation room is talking with their dad and kind of has him by the balls, and then she pulls out this letter that her sister mailed before she died, that's her own obituary that she's written, and it's like, how long? You've been in New York for 3 days. You were supposed to fly home and Olivia made you stay. When were you going to tell people about this?
Yeah, the sister, what are you doing?
Like, I get, like, this is a great scene. No notes. But when did you get that letter?
Yeah, when did you get that? When did you get literally the final piece of the puzzle that you
would have
refused?
Just saved everyone a ton of time and money.
Yeah.
But
so, question for you.
Yes.
Can we talk about Dean Winters for a second?
Which one's Dean Winters?
Oh, no. What's his name? God damn it. Hold on a second.
Is it Alice Warner?
It's the guy who plays Munch's partner.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Hold on. I feel terrible. I don't know their real name.
No, but this is just amazing that like that we're doing this literally on the fly.
Oh, Cassidy.
Yeah.
Dean Winters is known throughout entertainment as playing the bad cop in pretty much any show that
he was on Oz. And
he was on Oz.
Mm-hmm. I believe he was on Oz, if I'm not mistaken. I think he was. Anyway. The reason I bring him up is because all I think of is 30 Rock.
I'm so excited to talk about him. Yeah.
I can't see him as anything other than the 30 Rock guy.
Oh, I can't see him as anything other than Cassidy, this character. That's why I didn't know his name.
my apologies for not knowing his name. and to our listeners for listening to us figure it out. But I guess my question is, he's walking a fine line, and I get that, like, it works both ways, which is why it's great, right? Like, he can play this role in 30 Rock, and it's funny, mm-hmm. and then play it here, and it's straight.
Right.
But
he also plays that in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, he plays this vibe in everything.
Right. So, I guess my question is, this vibe is slightly dopey cop. Is that basically the vibe?
I'm really glad you brought this up, actually.
Great.
Because Cassidy fulfills a really important role in the unit that is ultimately taken over by Finn Tutuola, which is the man who is not a new detective, who's in the unit and is blown away by, is just totally uncomfortable and unknowledgeable about anything, any crime that might actually happen in special victims. Like, this guy didn't know what necrophilia was. And he was like, couldn't get through like talking about like ejaculation on the subway. And it's like, what do you do all day in the special victims unit if you can't not giggle when talking about an erect penis? Like, Cassidy, pull together. And eventually Finn Tutuola, as played by Ice-T, takes on that role in the unit. Which is hysterical as he goes on to be in the unit for 20 years and has to rise the ranks. So now he's like a lieutenant who's like, what? Someone was raped?
Would you say that these characters play sort of conduits for the audience, right? Like, they're kind of...
Yeah, it's so that you can kind of understand what's going on. Right. And Cassidy leaves the show and then comes back years later, and he and Olivia have a little.
Really?
Really. Yeah. Yeah. It's tricky. He's with her during one of the kidnappings, and she can't open up about it. And that's what.
I honestly, this kidnapping is just, it's my new favorite thing.
I know.
I had no idea that Olivia Benson was kidnapped
twice.
Same person.
By Pablo Schreiber, who's super hot.
That's so great. So great. Love it. This is a good opportunity to talk about Munch for a second, because this was a weird thing. And I think, I don't know if this has ever happened since or ever before.
Yeah.
Shortly after the cancellation of Homicide: Life on the Street, Richard Belzer, who plays Munch, that's his real name, just so you know, heard that Benjamin Bratt was leaving Law & Order. He went to his manager and said, can you call Dick Wolf? I want to be on Law & Order. Maybe my character can be the new partner to whatever.
I love that. Like, this, I'll be the new Benjamin Bratt.
Which I think is hilarious and amazing. but at that point, they had hired, oh my God, what's the guy's name? Jesse L. Martin had been hired on Law & Order. Long story short, they figured out, well, why don't we bring Munch onto SVU? That literal character, not this actor, this literal character from a different television series in a different city They were just like, so like, we're just led to believe that this New York and this Baltimore exist in the same plane of existence. That like,
yeah. So, and there's no crossover ever.
There's none.
Yeah, like he never goes and like visits his own his
he
old.
Never goes back to Baltimore. Ever. Never. So the character of Bunch was inspired by David Simon's depiction of a detective, which was developed on Homicide, which was created by Tom Fontana and Barry Levinson.
Is that legal to just take a character out of another?
Well, this is why it's interesting. So oh, okay. The only way they could do it was to have consent from David Simon, Tom Fontana, and Barry Levinson. The appropriate agreements were reached, and while Fontana and Levinson agreed to waive their royalty rights, contracts for Simon were required, and he had to be paid royalties for any new show in which Munch is a main character. And as a result, Simon gets royalties for every episode that Munch is in. Now, here's what's also crazy. Well, yeah, it's smart, and whoever David Simon's agent is was smart, but it also means that David Simon gets money for The X-Files, Arrested Development, The Wire, 30 Rock, and Kimmy Schmidt, all of which Munch appears on as Munch.
Munch? What?
Yes.
I did not know that. What?
So we're now led to believe that all of these shows exist in the same fucking universe because this guy's in all of them.
It's like the princess switch. I will say Munch is a really bizarre, like he's not the one that I would be like, this character should do everything. Like he's just a conspiracy theorist and like has a bunch of ex-wives and like that's his character. Like he doesn't trust the government, which I guess, I mean, that played out. That's very timely now. But
I would go to the live and say, that's Richard Belzer.
Yeah,
like I don't actually like
Richard Belzer. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, but it's just like, what a gig, what a role that he stumbles into.
Right.
Where basically he's like, I'll just be me, but I'll be a cop, I guess.
Yeah, basically. And everyone will just love it and I'll work like one day a week.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So I want to kind of as we sort of wrap this up, I want to kind of focus on Olivia for a second here, and just really kind of there's no way that we can in a reasonable amount of time be able to talk about Olivia Benson, her journey over 481 episodes, but I kind of want to just sort of, I guess my question is, what is it about her that you love so much? Mm-hmm. Like what about this character is, because you're not alone. Like this is a character, Taylor Swift aside, this is a character that I feel like people fucking love, right? I mean, this show continues. I mean, to this day, I'm just going to pull up its ratings for a quick second here, just so you have a sense of what I'm talking about. I mean, this show right now, okay, bear with me one second here. Okay, so when it was at its peak, at its highest ratings, the show was getting over 15 million viewers per week, which is pretty insane.
When was that? Was that like 2006? You don't know.
No, it was 2001, 2002.
Oh, okay.
So this show is at its height between basically seasons, let's just say seasons 2 through, I mean, this is insane, but 10. Okay, I would say that basically...
No, those are the best ones. Those are. 2 through 10 are great.
That's when the show is getting over 10 million viewers every week, which is, you know, obviously today people will be like, that's whatever. That's insane to a certain degree. Yeah. So there's that. The show is still, okay, we're now in season 21. The show's still getting 7-8 million viewers, right? So like, it has not taken that much of a hit over its time. I think that's Olivia Benson. I mean, the crimes obviously to some degree. So what is it about this character that you think is so compelling or what is it about her that you love so much?
I've never had to verbalize it. So it might come out as a jumble, but I think part of what brings people back is just like the comfort of the procedural, like I know the opening credits and like it's going to be a crime and that's fun, and like the setup is fun, kind of sexy. Definitely part of what brings people back is Olivia Benson and Mariska Hargitay. And just by the way, now she has just an incredible setup wherein she's an EP, so make it bank. She can direct any episode she wants throughout the season. And she's working based on like my estimations on how many scenes she's in. It's like 1 to 2 days a week. Like she is killing it.
Well, her and Ellen Pompeo have like, yeah, they've got the deals in television.
Yeah, it's great. Only Olivia, I don't think she has the same deal where I think she can go be on other stuff, but she doesn't because, which is the other thing I think is a big draw to Mariska. She's really dedicated her life to like fighting domestic abuse, bringing attention to rape crises and like crimes against women and like non-cis men. And that's like for over 20 years, she's been really at the forefront of like raising money and raising awareness. And she's kind of like made that part of who she is as a person. And I think that's maybe given some authenticity to the show. I don't know that people come to the show looking for authenticity. But there's just something about her where it's like, okay, you really dedicated your life to this show. And it's like the show itself, now that I've seen it all, I mean, the whole thing is really just like her arc of her story of going from this like very young, relatively new detective who wasn't unsure, was very confident in herself and her skills, but is the only like woman in the unit and all of this stuff. So eventually, like now she's the lieutenant and kind of oversees everything, and she has a son, and you see her kind of build this whole life for herself. And I mean, that's nice. I don't know. There's just something about her where like she cares about the victim. Like she was the one who was like saying me too before everyone else was, you know? And I think that's nice. And there's also just a certain like kitsch and nostalgia to a lot of the show that's entertaining, and she's fun and part of that. But yeah, I think Mariska has a certain je ne sais quoi about her.
She absolutely does. I mean, there is something very, you know, I might not be articulating this well either, since I don't know the show as well as you or the role that well, but Mariska has this this intelligence, obviously, this fortitude, obviously. There's a heart to her as well. There's a head to her as well. Like there just seems to be, she conveys a whole plethora of emotions, obviously, that are able to create sort of the complexity of this character. I would also say too, I mean, I'd be willing to bet that if you asked Mariska about a bunch of things that's happened to her character, she might not remember all of them.
No way.
Because she's been in a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
But the history of that character is still read even in episode 2.
Right.
In the sense that she's built a history for this person and it radiates off of her. And I think that is, she's, you know, she's doing amazing work on the show. It's one of those things where I've thought about, you know, as an actor, when you sign on for a broadcast television show, and I say this specifically for broadcast because it's really not the same for streaming and for cable, right. Where like you're signing on the dotted line and you know that there's a good chance you're shooting 22 of these for at least 4 years, most likely perhaps longer than that. And if it is longer than that, getting out of that box and getting anyone to think of you as anyone other than Olivia Benson or Fox Mulder or Meredith Grey is very, very hard to do. I get that. And that's a risk that some people are willing to take. What I do love is to see, and you can see it with Ellen Pompeo as well to a certain degree.
They just embrace it.
Sorry.
Oh, no. They embrace like, okay, this is the character I'm going to be remembered for and I'm going to do a good job. I mean, I don't think there's anything to look down on. Like people are going to remember Mariska Hargitay. Like she was on television forever and played this key character. And it's not like her husband plays a reoccurring character in the show. Nice. Yeah. It's like a family.
But I also think that it comes back to sort of what you were saying as well, which is the power that comes with this, right? Which is, you know, professionally, you can look at what Mariska and Ellen have done in terms of breaking barriers and ceilings for what actors, more specifically female actors, get paid and can be producers and the various power that they can have professionally. But then to be able to wield that power out in the world in terms of what Mariska's doing for various, you know, victims of sexual abuse or what have you. I mean, that's
It's pretty cool.
That's the whole thing. It's an amazing thing. It really
is. Especially considering her character, like Stabler was supposed to be the main character, you know, like he's the one who got all the backstory until he left. And so, you know, that she not only stayed, but kind of took over the show and made it her own is pretty cool. I love Olivia.
Yeah.
And she does this cool thing. I mean, as someone who really does enjoy like a procedural detective story, I sometimes have to reckon my own like personal politics with the criminal justice system, with like what I'm watching on television. And Olivia Benson as a character, she's like all about the victim and the survivor. And she like will manipulate the law in ways that expose her to do what she feels is right. And I think that that's really cool. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that
when you're dealing with sexually based crimes, the perpetrator is also a victim themselves in some way.
Sure.
And she's very cognizant of that.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting too. And I you know, not to get too political, but I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say that, you know, police shows right now are in a tricky space. Understandably so. I mean, I think that there are, you know, the depiction of police officers as, you know, having tunnel vision or being biased in a myriad of ways, I think is problematic. And I think that they go out of their way, it seems, at least with this character, to make her seem, if not more open-minded, certainly someone who is able to have her mind changed, is that she's totally an evolving animal.
Right.
And I think that that's an incredibly important thing that I think a lot of these procedural shows are so locked and loaded, no pun intended, in terms of these characters being so rigid in their worldview. And yeah. I think that, you know, she's not one of them, which I think is also
And the show itself, I think, got lucky in that, like, yes, they're cops, but they're like the sex crimes cops, so they're like woke.
Yeah, you would hope. I mean, Jesus.
But then you have Cassidy being like, I have to say penis in a court of law.
You know? Yeah, like I think it's in the second episode where he says fromage on the stand.
And he means necrophilia. Which is like, not only are you a detective in the sex crimes unit, you're also an adult man.
You're a grown-up.
Like, what are you doing? You look like an idiot. I know, but he is the like window for the audience into like explaining what it is. But it's just hysterical to me of like, this like makes no sense. Like, you're a detective? That means... And you were the detective on this case. It's not like you just told me yesterday. Anyway, I could really go off on that.
So here's another question for you.
Yeah.
So when does Stabler leave?
He leaves in season 12, kind of suddenly, after the season finale. Do you want me to tell? It doesn't matter. I can tell you what happened. There's this whole two-part episode. Anyway, so he ultimately has to, this 13-year-old girl, her mother has died. She's come to the police precinct. She's bought a gun off the street and she shoots, her mom's killer who's in a holding cell, and, Stabler is forced to shoot and kill her, like in the precinct. And, the next season in the first episode, they just kind of say, you know, that was too much for him. He had to leave. He couldn't handle shooting a little girl, which I get, but also I've watched him for 12 years do like all kinds of crazy shit that I wouldn't say is like better or worse than shooting a 13-year-old girl. And he had like crazy anger issues throughout the series. So like, why is, I don't know. It felt like an easy excuse, but he's coming back. It was a contractual thing.
Yeah. I heard that. They couldn't get him to sign up for the show anymore. And he was asking for too much money. So
They really had to write his like anger issues into the show. He was like having a personal issue. I suspect. And Mariska stepped the fuck up. She's great. Yeah.
This is, you said season 12. Is that when he leaves?
Yeah. If you can believe it. I can't believe how long ago it was now. It feels like yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, for everybody, I assume. But so he leaves in season 12.
Yeah.
Now he has his own show. Now he has like a new show I don't know what that show's called.
I hate that. I shouldn't say that, but I think it's a bummer. Stabler had a show. It was called Law and Order Special Victims Unit, and he left. He doesn't get a new show. He can come back to Mariska's department, but he can't go be another whole thing. Like, what, we need another Catholic detective on the streets, like, solving crimes? Like, give me a break, Stabler.
It's for those that are excited, it's called Law & Order Organized Crime, so it'll be just Stabler versus mobsters, I guess. I believe
he's good up against organized crime, I will say.
I'm just like, I love that you're like, you know, fuck, that's a good unit for him to be in.
A good unit for sure. I'm just bummed. Like, if you're gonna come be in Law and Order, come be in Law and Order. Don't do this.
So Olivia is gonna be in the first one.
I would like to like meet him and hang out.
I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, and he was supposed to
very nice.
The damn coronavirus.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure he's really nice. I think I hold a lot of what his character did against him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have a little bit of a tough time drawing a line between fact and fiction.
I do. I've watched this show alone in my apartment for like months and months. I hope he doesn't hear this, because I really would like I hope he does listen to, I don't know. I support him in all he does. I just feel like he could support Mariska.
Well, yeah, I mean, my assumption is that these two shows are going to cross over and speak to each other a fair amount, if for no other reason than to help this spinoff do well in the ratings. Yeah. So I'm assuming that
you don't need other on orders. I'm sorry. You just need this one special victim. Because all rapes, it's special victims, which is a really big umbrella. So it's not like you're just solving, you know, rapes and murders all the time. There are all kinds of stuff going on. Everything's different.
You brought it up. So I want to kind of see the different spinoffs that exist.
Yeah.
For Law and Order, because I don't know all of them. Bear with me a second here as I look this up.
I've never seen any of them.
Okay, so there's Law and Order Special Victims Unit, Law and Order Criminal Intent, Law and Order UK, Law and Order LA, Law and Order Trial by Jury.
What?
Law and Order, yeah.
Aren't they all trials by jury?
I mean, listen. Then there's Law and Order True Crime. They tried to basically do American Crime Story, but with the Menendez trial, but that no one watched it.
Yeah.
So there was that. And then Hate Crimes. There's a Hate Crimes one that I guess
they're doing too. All of those fall under the Menendez brothers could have been a great two-parter SVU episode. Hate Crimes they deal with all the time on SVU. Like, they're just trying, they're just picking apart. That's stupid. I'm really down on any non-SVU Law & Order things.
Well, the best part is that you've never seen the original Law & Order. So as far as you're concerned, there should be only one spinoff, which is the only one you've watched.
Mariska is not in the original, correct?
Who?
Mariska is not in the original, correct?
She's not. No.
No need to SVP. I really do like her, which I didn't fully realize until this conversation. Like, it's dumb. The show is very kitschy and silly. Yeah. And like, their first episode this season, which I cannot believe I'm finally watching it, like, in real time, week to week. Like, that's got to
be. Is it started airing?
Yeah. It's a new level of, like, depression, but whatever. their first episode is literally about Karens and opens with, like, the Amy Cooper footage in Central Park of that woman who tried
yelling to at the guy. That black man.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's ridiculous. Like, that's ridiculous to do that. But I really enjoy it. And I get all the characters now and what they're up to. And there are new, you know, hijinks happening. I don't know. This is just the thing that I have in my life.
No, I mean, you're not alone. I think that, this is another question I have. This is specific, I guess, to SVU, but I guess this is a Law and Order question across the board, which is, do you feel like the ripped from the headlines episodes are as strong as the just made up ones.
What is strong? Like, that Casey Anthony episode is lit. Like, it is so good. But it is, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And did they do an Amanda Knox episode? They must have, right?
No. I don't think they ever did it. Well, the Italian authorities would have handled that. They do a lot of roommate murders. They love prep schools. They're always going to their fake Columbia. So they have had versions of it. I don't know if they've done one specific, because before the they never say inspired by it. They say, legally, this is not based on anything. And when that comes up at the beginning of the episode, you know, this is going to be good.
You know, this is based on a real thing, but that they are covering their ass. So I guess
the headlines once.
So you like the rip from this. So the Karen episode, for
when
instance,
they don't put it, it means that it's just from the writer's room. That's not right. From anything.
So the Karen episode.
Yeah.
Did you feel as though it did justice to this story?
It was actually a lot going on because it was their first episode back from COVID. So everyone has to explain COVID and they're wearing masks and stuff, which is funny. Everyone's always like, mask up. It's like, okay, we're really living in this. And but also,
whatever it takes, Jesus, get people to wear masks.
It was the first episode back after the Black Lives Matter protests, and so Olivia had some reckoning to do, and it's very clean. She's like, reckons and is done. In the next episode, she's done reckoning. But they had that and the Karens and the COVID. It was like so much for just 44 minutes. The episode. It's hard to explain. I honestly can't. To return to your original question,
yeah.
I don't know that I could say if I prefer Rip from the Headlines to not Rip from the Headlines. Some of the Rip from the Headlines are just glorious in ridiculous ways. Uh-huh. The ones that come from the writer's room are sometimes just like more interesting in terms of the crime. Like, you got a few more interesting twists and turns. So it just like, do you want camp or do you want to like really solve some gritty crimes in Manhattan?
I mean, you got to ask yourself that question every time.
Every time you watch, right? Yeah, you have to.
Do you have any favorite episode titles? Because I am looking at some real doozies here.
That sucks. I don't, but one of my favorite books, Her Body and Other Parties, one of the chapters is, it's just a list of SVU log lines. Like, that's the chapter.
So
it's just all the log lines after another, and it's like haunting. but no, I don't have a favorite.
I mean, a lot of them are one word. Strange,
exactly.
That kind of stuff.
Totem, I really recommend. Totem is just a crazy episode. When someone has when someone has an adopted kid in this show, you need to really keep your eyes open.
Yes.
Yes. That adopted kid is either stolen or replacing a previous kid. Don't trust adopters is what SVU really drives home. But Totem is a really great episode. The one words are helpful because they apply. Like, I remember Totem.
Can I just say though,
another great one? Zebras is a really good episode.
Here they're mostly one word until.
Well, they run out of words.
Well, until season 14, when they start to get real poetic. Manhattan Vigil, Dreams Deferred, Monster's Legacy, Poisoned Motive.
Oh, that shit. That was a really crazy episode. I really remember these. Could you go on?
October Surprise.
Yeah.
Surrender Benson. I don't know. Comic Perversion.
That's one of her kidnappers, Surrender Benson.
It's Spring Awakening. I mean, they're really good.
Yeah.
Some of them are just, I don't know. I enjoy, I enjoy the titles of episodes in general. I just find them really fun.
It's funny to think, like, I would love to go back to, like, October Surprise. Like, I like, after you watch the episodes, there's sometimes an obvious connection between title and episode, but sometimes it's like, what? And you feel like you missed something. And so, like, I'd be curious to watch some of those and, like, where did that title come from? Because sometimes they have a real moral at the center mm-hmm. of the story, and that's where the title comes from. And if you miss it, you miss the title.
Do you know what would be a fun game to do? I'm not suggesting we do this right now, but to imagine what the episode's about just based on the title.
Yeah.
So, like, there's one here called She Paints for Vengeance.
Oh, I actually know that episode. Painters are another really intense occupation on SVU. They have a ton of, they're either murdered or they have a ton of just anger that they're splashing at the canvas.
So what is She Paints for Vengeance about?
All of them.
What was She Paints for Vengeance about?
What'd you say?
She Paints for Vengeance. Do you remember what that episode was actually about?
If I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, it's a painter who is exposing her former abusers via her work. So she's going around, like, painting. I think she's painting, like, posters and stuff around town.
Can I read you the log line?
Am I wrong? Go say it.
I'm just going to read it. I don't know if you're right or wrong. The Special Victims Unit investigate the sexual assault of a stripper. I mean, that could be any episode.
Okay.
The stripper, Monica Russo, is angry due to her case being dismissed by a detective who believed the case wasn't important because she was a stripper, which makes her difficult to work with. When trial comes, Carisi deals with the rapist's attorney, former judge Elena Barth, who is tough and harsh in the courtroom. Meanwhile, Rollins struggles to get over the trauma from her ordeal with Bucci.
Okay, that's a horrifically written.
Yeah, I didn't write it. I didn't write it. That's Wikipedia.
Not great. Yeah, so that episode, sometimes people don't report. When you have a rape that you report to a local precinct, they're supposed to refer you straight to Manhattan SVU. Yeah. A lot of times those precincts don't do it. And they are dismissive of rape cases, and then they're not handled. So what happens is all the detectives are going along, and now they're seeing all these billboards that are calling them out for not helping this girl because she went to the precinct and the precinct didn't refer her, which is...
I see.
You know, she's like upset that no one helped her and her rapist went free. And so she's painting these billboards. That's making the cops not look very good. That was also, they did a bunch of like Me Too episodes, and I believe that was in there.
I see.
Is that interesting?
No, it is. Here's what I love. And I've done this too. And I don't know if this is, I do this with ER, which is like, there are times where I'm like, oh, I understand medicine. Like I've watched all the episodes of ER. I get the impression that you think you know how the SVU unit works.
I know how it works as it's been explained on the show. I don't know in real life.
that's what
you, right, yeah.
Right, right.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on to talk with me about SVU because quite frankly I knew nothing about it.
It's a really great time if you watch it. If for nothing else, there are a million episodes, and I was shocked when I finished it, and Hulu was like, there's no more.
You were like, wait, what? Like, I'm done?
How?
I mean, you could always go and watch another Law & Order.
No, because they're not on Hulu. That's what I'm telling you. They're not free on Hulu. Only SVU is. I'm not going to pay, like...
The desperation in your voice. Is amazing.
I'm not going to pay $1.99 an episode for Law & Order when it's not going to be as good.
I think the first one's free on Peacock.
Oh, do I have to sign up for Peacock? Well, we don't have to figure it out. I'll tell you.
I mean, Peacock is not hard to sign up for, is my point.
Okay.
But all that being said, I hope that you'll come back and talk about something else too, whatever that might very well be.
This is the only thing that I know about.
I don't think that's true.
Okay.
I think there could be other things. We'll find something out. Wow. Either way, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my God, please. And for talking about Olivia Benson and all that she, in her multitudes. This was fantastic.
Yeah. So let me know if you need episode recommendations or if your listeners do. I'm available. I'd love to help anybody on this journey.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.